You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
I'm actually coming to you live from New Jersey, Hoboken, New Jersey. And Ty is producing the show in New York. Ty, good afternoon. Hi.
Good afternoon to you, my friend.
Do I sound different to you at all? Is like my audio sound better, different?
No.
Really?
I would love.
I was hoping you'd say yes.
I would love to say yes because I know you're. It's a pointed question. You want me to say yes, but
I do want you to say yes. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. I now have a studio. So I just, here's the thing. I feel more legit, right? Like too legit to quit. I feel like more legit that. And I think we talked about this, right? Like this used to be my dog's room, and now it's my studio. And so there is somewhat of a little echo in here. So I ordered what you put on the wall, the sponges, mm-hmm. the padding that you put on the wall. That's not coming till Sunday though. So, but it's pretty cool. I'm excited about it. Got a studio back here, radio and television. So and here's another thing. Part of me is like really excited about it too, because it's like, not only is it like legit, but it's kind of like it says football has arrived, right? It's like, all right. And I've talked about this before as well. Like my life changes during football. Like I have the Anita life during football season, and then I have the Anita life outside of football season. And so we are just a few days away. So like Tuesday, Daily Wager kicks up 6 to 7 p.m. on ESPN2. I'll be on 4 or 5 days a week. So excited about that from this studio. And then, of course, we've got our Weekend Wager. It was on yesterday. Our gambling show on Friday nights from 10 to midnight. Brought to you by BetMGM. And then our Saturday show. And then Chris Canty and I are back on Sunday mornings. So it's just, it's kind of like Tuesday after Labor Day, that light switch turns on. And it's just, it's a whole new world. it's a whole new life. So I don't know about you. I'm excited about it. You know, Ty, we talked about it before. Like I did not expect the NFL to start on time. I did not expect us to be here this week heading into, what is it? The 10th is Thursday.
Yep.
And we'll have the Houston Texans with Deshaun Watson with a new deal. I read that this morning. Going up against
40. I mean, $160, 160 M's.
So what is do you know, cuz I know you were producing Dave's show. Did you guys break down like what is he making per year?
Well,
do we know?
It's it comes out to $39 million a year with I believe about a $26 million signing bonus.
Okay.
And it tacks on 4 years to the 2 years he already has in existence, so it ends up being 6 more years for Deshaun Watson.
So but what dudes really look at is what they're making per year. What was it that the Dallas Cowboys were offering Dak Prescott, do we know? Off the top of your head?
Wasn't it 35? I believe it was 35, no?
Okay. All right. That's fair. I mean, let's be honest. You know, you're an NFL team. Are you going to, and you have the pick of the litter, are you going to pick Deshaun Watson or Dak Prescott?
Oh, Deshaun Watson.
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's really, really going to be interesting. You know, there's a lot of people out there who feel that this will be Dak Prescott's last year with the Dallas Cowboys. So we'll see. Only time will tell. But we're with you for the next 3 hours. We've got a great show lined up for you. And we're a week ahead, and that's okay. Because we're going to have two staples on this show each and every Saturday. Bill Barnwell, who is just really phenomenal. He's got some of the best NFL articles on ESPN, their NFL site. He's going to be with us every Saturday. And that's going to kick off today. So Bill Barnwell is going to join us at 12:30. in about 20 minutes, 23 to be exact. We'll dive into some of the NFL topics. And then, as always, I want to say, gosh, Ty, I want to say this is like her third straight season of joining us on Saturdays. Cynthia Freeland from the NFL Network, she's going to be joining us as well. And there's a lot going on today and tonight. I talked about this on the Weekend Wager show last night, Ty. You know, I know that we're experiencing a not so fantastic 2020, right? And if you do recall, in March, mid-March, when the world kind of shut down, we lost all sport, right? We lost everything. NBA shut down, Gobert, you know, all that. It just, everything disappeared. And now, look what's going on this weekend. First of all, it's a holiday weekend. So first and foremost, wishing everybody out there a fantastic Labor Day. You know, and the weather's supposed to be beautiful. And this is kind of like, this is the last hurrah, right? Before stuff gets real for us pertaining to the NFL. And the NFL is king. So the NFL drives what we do in regard to our work. And also, schools are opening up. So this is kind of like everybody's last hurrah. So that's great that it's Labor Day. On top of that, look what's going on today. You've got the Kentucky Derby. Post time is going to be around 7 o'clock. You've got the Islanders going up against the Flyers in Game 7. That's around, puck drops around 7 o'clock. You got the U.S. Open going on right now. You've got NBA basketball. How about the Rockets upsetting the Lakers last night? And later on today, 6:30 p.m., you got the Raptors and the Celtics. Celtics up in that series 2-1. And then later on at 8 o'clock, you got the Nuggets and the Clippers. And the Clippers are up in that series by 1 as well. On top of that, you've got the Mets going at it against the Phillies. You've got the Yankees going at it against the Orioles. Which, by the way, Garrett Cole's on the bump today, which is great. But I was reading a stat. The last time the Yankees lost to the Orioles on the road was a long, long, I think like 2018, dude. Until, of course, last night. So there's just so much going on. And there's, I didn't even mention my favorite sport that I like to play. And that's the Tour Championship. So, you know, you've got the Tour Championship happening, kicked off yesterday on Friday. We'll go through the weekend, and then they'll crown a champion on Monday. This is kind of like the Super Bowl of golf in a sense. Yes, there's still some majors that need to be played. The U.S. Open, for one, which will happen here in, less than 2 weeks at Wingfoot. It's unfortunate, again, that, you know, because of the pandemic, there's not going to be any crowds, but still an exciting. So that you've got that major. And then, of course, almost a month later, you've got the Masters. So there's just so much going on, and it's such a fun time. And so it's fun to be on the radio with you this afternoon. So, like I said, we're going to be hot. We're going to be hard and heavy throughout the show in regard to the NFL. I'm off tomorrow, and I don't know about you, but I've had 3 fantasy football drafts already, 3 or 4, 3, I think. And I have 6 more coming up from starting Sunday night through Wednesday. So I would imagine that there's a number of people out there listening to the show that as well are getting ready for their fantasy football drafts. And unfortunately, I won't be back on the radio until Friday. So this will be the last opportunity you'll have to call into the show, ask me some fantasy football questions. I'm sure you're getting ready for your drafts, and I'm here to help you out. So we'll weave that throughout the show if anybody wants to have any fantasy football questions, 800-919-3776. But when we get back, why don't we do this? Because I know Dave was talking about the Giants and the Jets. Why don't we come back and let's tee that up? I mean, because there's a number of hot topics with both these teams, but more importantly, what are the realistic expectations for the Jets and the Giants? The Giants over under total out of Vegas is 6. The Jets over under total out of Vegas is 6.5. There's also a wager out there, which team is going to win the most games, the Giants or the Jets? If you think the Giants are going to win more regular season games than the Jets, That's at plus 103. If you think the Jets are going to win more regular season games than the Giants, that's at minus 125.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Here's the thing. It's not necessarily the fumbling for me with Daniel Jones. It was his pocket awareness. You know, at some point in time, you know, you've heard that phrase, like, you've got to have eyes in the back of your head. Well, it's more of a sense when you're playing the position, you have a feel. It's like, the best way I can describe it is, Ty, you've ever been anywhere and you're like, maybe you're at a store, you're at the grocery store, I don't know, and you feel somebody staring at you? You ever get that feeling like, who's
yes, that's, absolutely.
Okay, that's the best way I can describe. It's like you can't see it, but you know it. You know someone's staring. That's the feeling you get when you're in the pocket. You can't see it, but you know it's collapsing. So you've either got to tuck it and run, or you've got to tuck it and just get ready for the hit. But you need to have that awareness as a quarterback. And so my biggest concern for Daniel Jones is I didn't see that last year. And there, I'm going to steal a phrase from Michael Lombardi, who is a dear friend and does a phenomenal job. And he calls it the crib factor. I love that. You know, there's certain things you can teach. There's certain things that athletes can learn. But there are other elements and skill set to an athlete's game that a lot of times you can't teach and they can't learn. They're just born with it. And I love that Lombardi calls it the crib factor. And we'll find out. Listen, Nate Solder is out. Thomas is in at that left tackle position. Hopefully this offensive line is going to protect Daniel Jones better than they did last year. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see if he can protect the ball better. Let's listen. This is Daniel Jones on the Michael Kay Show talking about his fumbling issues.
A lot of those problems are prevented with ball security and keeping two hands on the ball in the pocket and making sure I'm doing that while I'm moving in the pocket. So there's lots of things in practice you can do to simulate that. I think, you know, a lot of individual drills where you're working through the pocket and, you know, whether you have guys, you know, simulating a rush and hitting you or whatever the, you know, case is, I think just maintaining, you know, those good fundamentals of having two hands on the ball in the pocket, I think is key to that.
Okay, but you also need to know, you know, again, pocket awareness. You need to know when the pocket is coming to an end and you're losing that protection. But again, only time will tell. So as I said earlier, there's a lot of fun wagers out there for both the Giants and the Jets. So the over-under win total for the Giants is 6. Either way you go, it's minus 110. The over-under win total for the Jets is 6.5. If you go over, it's at plus 123. If you go under, it's minus 150. So obviously the wise guys in Vegas believe that the Jets will not reach 7 wins. I think either of these teams will be lucky if they get to 6. And here's another wager for you. Giants and Jets, who do you think is going to win more games? The Giants plus 03 or the Jets minus 125? I'm staying away from that one. I just don't know. There's so many issues here. Let's start with the Giants first and foremost. Okay. One thing that I am putting a lot of weight into this season, because we are living in a pandemic and this is a COVID-19 preseason for the NFL. And that is, I am weighing heavily teams that have a lot of continuity. What do I mean by that? No change at head coach, no change at offensive coordinator, no change at defensive coordinator, no change at the quarterback position. To me, those teams have a leg up on everyone. And just to give you an example, I want to say about a few months back, we had Michael Westhoff call into the show. Michael, as you know, was part of the Jets coaching staff, special teams, and he spent 2 years, I think, 2 or 3 years with the Saints. Well, right after the pandemic and the players weren't able to come into the facility, a lot of teams were having to teach and have meetings and whatnot via Zoom. So one thing that Westhoff shared with us was the Saints aren't doing that because nothing's changing with them, Westhoff said. Sean Payton, the head coach, told the players, listen, spend your time working out and getting ready so that when the doors open and you are allowed to come back to the facility, we hit the ground running. So spend all your time getting into football shape. Don't worry about Zooming. They have the luxury of doing that because the majority of their team is returning, and they're going to implement the same offense. Obviously, I'm sure they're going to fine tune some things and tweak some things, but you know, nothing to see here, nothing new. this is what we're working with, as opposed to the Giants, where new head coach in Joe Judge, new offensive coordinator in Jason Garrett, new defensive coordinator, and they didn't have the luxury of doing that. They had to spend a lot of time on Zoom. They had to spend a lot of time learning this new system, and on top of that, no preseason games. Granted, I understand that they're having scrimmages and they're scrimmaging against one another, but do you think that they're hitting like they would in a preseason game? Absolutely not. And you've heard that phrase before, right? Football shape. Got to be in football shape. I don't think one of the 32 teams, I don't think anyone, the guys are going to be in football shape. It's one thing to go out there and lift weights and run drills and shells. It's another to get hit by a dude who's running, what, 20, 25, 30 miles an hour? Yeah. And I am just as excited as anyone for Thursday night in week one. I can't wait. As Bart Scott likes to say, right? But I think we need to temper our expectations. I think football is going to be ugly for weeks. I think there's going to be, unfortunately, I hate to say this, and I pray to God I'm wrong. I think there's going to be a lot of soft tissue injuries. I think we're going to have a football season unlike any other in regard to injuries, ligaments, tendons, that sort of Achilles, that sort of thing. I pray, like I said, I pray to God I'm wrong. I'm anticipating that. We're going to see a lot of missed tackles. The football that we're going to be watching for the first 3 to 5 weeks is really going to be bad. It's going to be god awful. And what's going to happen is the teams that didn't have a lot of change, the teams that had a lot of continuity, aren't going to look as bad, because they were already ahead of the curve coming into the season. Follow me? On top of that, with the Giants, that's obviously something that they're dealing with. On top of that, with all due respect to their wide receiving core, does nothing for me. I pray to God Sterling Shepard can be active and attractive for 12 games or 16 games, but I worry about his migraine issue and his concussion issue. Golden Tate is long in the tooth. Evan Ingram has a busted foot that I don't think will stay healthy for 16 weeks. I just think there's a lot that you have to have concerns about on the offensive side of the ball. On the defensive side of the ball, they don't have an edge rusher. Probably Lorenzo Carter is going to lead them in sacks this season. And I don't even know what to make of their secondary. And it's quite frightening, I think, that they're going up against arguably the number one defense in the NFL week one, Monday night. The Steelers' defense is just ridiculously sick. And for an offense that had to learn an entirely new system and has not practiced. Here's another thing, and I'm not, you know, for folks, maybe I'm sure there are folks out there that who've never played football, but you love sports, but you've never played football. It's a lot easier to play defense than it is to play offense. You know, offense, there's so much that goes into getting all 11 guys on the same page to be able to execute properly and move the ball down the field and move the chains. On defense, a lot more of it is the physicality and the athleticism. So I'm not anticipating a lot of points to be scored the first few weeks of the season, by the way. I think across the board defenses are going. So I like the under in a lot of, if you're a wagering person like I am, I like the unders in a lot of games for at least the first 3 weeks of the season. I think defenses are going to dominate because of that. And it's unfortunate the Giants week one, right off the bat, they go up against the best defense. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers had the best defense in the NFL. And it's week one, so you know Ben Roethlisberger is going to be healthy. You know, it's one of those things. You play the Pittsburgh Steelers later on in the year, chances are you've got a 50-50 shot that Ben Roethlisberger is not going to be active. But it's week one. So no bueno. No bueno for the Giants. Again, I think they'll be lucky if they win six games. If I was to put money, and this is not one of my favorite bets on the year, but if I was to put money on this, I would go under six wins for the Giants, and that's at minus 110.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Earlier in the show, our first hour, I kind of broke down my thoughts in regard to the Giants, and I teed up some topics for Bill Barnwell, who was just on with us. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball, right? The offensive line, did it improve in the draft? Yes, they brought in Becton, but is it what it needs to be? No. I think Sam Darnold is going to be under duress this season. Wide receiving core, and I've been on the record saying this, I would have liked for the Jets to have drafted Jerry Jeudy and then get another offensive lineman in the second round of the draft. This is why, you know, I'm not in charge of teams and I'm not a general manager. I just play one in fantasy football, but I just look at that wide receiving core and it does not excite me. I mean, Jamison Crowder is probably going to get a ridiculous amount of volume. The only two players in fantasy, by the way, that I would want to draft this season is Chris Herndon and Crowder, because I think they're going to get a ton of targets this year. I think it's going to be a difficult season for this offense. Lev Bell, we're not hearing great things about him at camp, and we are hearing phenomenal things about Frank Gore, who's been in the league for 16 years. On the defensive side of the ball, they don't have a guy who's going to get after a quarterback, an edge rusher. I don't understand why they're not tapping the water in regard to Jadeveon Clowney, and reports are there's a chance he's going to go to the Saints. Shh, he goes to the Saints. Wow. Who's going to beat that Saints team in the NFC? Mosley's gone because he opts out. They trade Jamal Adams. Defensive coordinator Greg Williams is definitely going to earn his paycheck this year. There's no denying that. So with that being said, Ty's producing the show, by the way, back in New York. I feel like a negative Nelly here, Ty. I know you're a big Jets fan, and I'm sorry. I have to be honest. Like I'm not betting these two win totals. I'm just not. There are other win totals out there that I love more than this, but if I was forced to play these, I would play the under on both. I think the Jets and the Giants are going to be really fortunate if each of them wins six games. I think it's going to be really tough for both squads.
Yeah, as far as, you know, the Jets go, I remember we had this conversation a couple of months ago, and I said that it was the expectation that they'd be better than last year just because you get Sam Darnold in theory for a full season. You know, C.J. Mosley's back. Hopefully Le'Veon Bell is inserted into the equation, and then you got Jamal Adams. But since then, we've learned Mosley's opted out. Adams has been traded. There's still friction between Le'Veon Bell and Adam Gase. And it doesn't feel like they've addressed enough of the issues offensively that would lead you to have more confidence this season. So I'm with you. I mean, the most diehard of Jet fans is obviously going to root for them and be all confident going into next Sunday against the Bills and hoping and praying they make the playoffs. Now you've got an extra spot at the seventh seed. You hope they can get to 8-8 because maybe that gets it done, but I'm with you, Anita. I don't know how any rational Jets fan feels good about this situation we're about to enter starting on September 13th.
September what?
13th.
13th, okay. That's right. So, but the league kicks off on the 10th.
Yes, on the 10th, but the Jets play next Sunday in Buffalo.
Right, right. 800-919-3776. Let's get to your calls. Let's go to James in Long Island. James, you're up.
Hey, Anita. Hey, Anita. How's it going?
Good afternoon.
You know, I think I agree with you in the fact that I think that I kind of agree with you in the fact that I think the Jets that they do have a tough schedule, but I think that for talent wise on their team, I think they do. They could have a chance to be near that, but I also because I like Mims, I think he can take a decent step up there, and I think Herndon will be a beast for them this year, and I think Darnold, he's got to prove something, right? Because he's in his third year, and I think if he doesn't prove something and the Jets don't do great, I think Gase might be out on his way. And if you're the Jets and you have another high pick, are you going to pass up on the opportunity to get Trevor Lawrence out of that draft? I wouldn't.
But James, here's the thing. Do you and I understand that in life nothing is fair, but do you really think that Sam Darnold needs to prove something with a less than adequate offensive line and a very subpar wide receiving core? Do you really like, what are your realistic, with that being said, James, I'm curious, how does Sam Darnold prove himself to you with what he's working with? I'm just curious. What is a good season for you in regard to Sam Darnold this season?
To me, I think a good season for him, I think he's got to stay healthy, which obviously we know with the mono, that's not his fault. I mean, whatever, that, and he can't, and he's got to stay on the field. He can't, and he's got to use his weapons, what he's got. As I said before, I think Mims is going to be good for him. I think Herndon's there. I just think he's got to be, I think he's got to stay healthy. That's the main thing, and I think he's got to just prove that he's willing to stay there, because if I'm the Jets, if I'm Joe Douglas, and if I get another high pick, I'm going with Trevor Lawrence. The upside is too good for me there, and if Sam Darnold doesn't have a great season, I'm saying goodbye to Sam Darnold and saying hello, Trevor Lawrence.
Interesting. James, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate it. You talk about the Jets picks. Look at what they have right now. Heading into next season, they have two first-round draft picks. One, of course, will be their own. The other will be the first-round draft pick they got from Seattle. They have a second, they have two thirds, two fourths, a fifth, a sixth, two sevenths. One, let me count. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. They've got 10 draft picks. 10 draft picks. Really quick before we take the next call, Ty, I'm curious. I want to get your thoughts on this. I had Connor Rogers on with me the other night. I was in for Chris Carlin, and Connor kind of threw out there, suggested, kind of floated this notion that maybe the Jets are tanking this season.
Oh no!
With all these draft picks, think about it, Ty. And listen, I'm not saying that this is what Connor Rogers was alluding to. He just threw it out here with a concept or a possibility, and I think we have to discuss it. Look at all those draft picks. I mean, if ever there was a year that you wanted to tank, it's this year. With that many draft picks, are you kidding me? And where they're located?
Yeah, but they've missed the playoffs.
Seven picks within the first four rounds, dude.
Yeah, but I mean, for a team that's missed the playoffs in what, the last eight seasons? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Yes, the last eight seasons, you've got a quarterback, a franchise quarterback who you've invested so much in. And you still have some unanswered questions about him. You've got a head coach, same deal. You've invested a lot in him and the GM, and there's still some trepidation about what the future of the franchise is. So there's no way you're tanking this season. There is no way you go into this campaign and you think the best course of action is to lose as many games as you can. Absolutely not. Especially when it feels like no Brady here. I know they got Cam Newton and he might be better than what Brady was last year, just like this version of him. The division feels like it's as wide open as it has been in quite some time. There's no way.
Here, understand what I mean by tanking. Okay. It doesn't mean that Adam Gase is walking into that locker room and telling the guys not to play hard. It's not Adam Gase calling a play that he knows is going to be a negative result. That's not what I mean by tanking. What I mean is, why aren't the Jets going after Clowney? They don't have an edge rusher. They've got money. They got money. They could afford him. Why aren't they going after him? Why did they trade away Jamal Adams? I mean, there's a million reasons why. I understand, but they didn't have to. I mean, I think they were. I think both the Jets and Seattle both won in that deal. But nonetheless, I understand what I mean by the word tank. It's not that these guys are going to go out and purposely lose.
You're
games.
You're just saying that it would be better for them to go 2-12 or 2-14 this year.
Right. And maybe what I mean by tank is maybe the Jets aren't doing everything in their ability right now to put the best roster on the field. That's what I'm saying. Like, maybe they're holding back this year and not going after every player that they could bring in that would help benefit this team to win football games.
Doesn't it feel like Adam Gase has this weird aversion to stars? Like he was like that in Miami when he was trading all their best players away. He didn't like the Le'Veon Bell signing, according to all these reports. And I think the same was said about C.J. Mosley. So the Clowney signing is interesting. Like, why wouldn't you target him? It feels an area of need, and you desperately need that as a pass rusher. The Jets haven't had a pass rusher in God knows how long. Maybe something's up with Gase. He has like this weird aversion to stars and marquee names. It's odd.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Lakers, now they lose to Houston last night, 112-97. Houston coming out playing small ball. Now, heading into this, because I was on the air last night prior to this game kicking off, tipping off, whatever you want to say it, hoof, paw. And really, the big question mark coming in was two things. Number one, and Ty, I'd love for you to chime in here because I know you're a big NBA fan. Number one was, what were you more concerned about? The fact that the Lakers were off for, what, 9-10 days? Right? Or that Houston was out of gas and coming in tired and a little run down.
Well, I thought the Lakers would win pretty easily last night. You have the Rockets coming off a pretty emotional back and forth affair in Game 7 two nights ago against a team they should not have gone 7 games with in the Oklahoma City Thunder. Almost lost it. And you just felt like they were going to have dead legs because we saw the Nuggets have the same thing happen. And then the Clippers wiped the floor with them. So I figured the Lakers would have some rust, but the greatness of LeBron James and Anthony Davis would be more than enough to beat the Rockets pretty easily last night. And that was not the case. If you're the Lakers, I think the biggest concern is the Rockets won by 15. And anytime you see them blow you out, you figure it's because they just got hot from three-point range. That's what they do. They're a lethal three-point shooting team. So that's what happened. And the Rockets really did not have that. They hit 14 threes last night, and they still won by 15. So that's what's most concerning. I think the Lakers bounce back tomorrow. They're still going to win this series. But last night was just inexcusable. LeBron, his teams usually struggle in game ones because it's like the feeling out process. I know they use game one as like a scouting report almost. I know that kind of is confusing, but that's historically what happens to LeBron James's teams in game one. I fully expect them to come out tomorrow and handle the Rockets pretty easily.
Well, I'll tell you who's concerned, and that's Magic Johnson. You see his tweets on Twitter. The Lakers
love
better
Magic Johnson tweets. Love
right.
Him.
The Lakers, this is Magic posted this last night. The Lakers better realize quick that the Houston Rockets are not the Portland Trailblazers. The Lakers had no energy, played slow, were outplayed on both ends of the floor early in the game, which is very surprising. Like I said, going in, you know, I had two concerns. Number one, the Lakers layoff, cobwebs, you know, was it going to be difficult to kind of get back in action? And with Houston, you know, were they tired? And worn out and run down, and not having the fresh legs that you know, we thought the Lakers were going to have. Last tweet from Magic Johnson: James Harden was spectacular, scoring 36 points against the Lakers, and we had no answer for him. So Magic,
Magic always brings the insight on Twitter. You can't get that anywhere else.
It's so funny. So Harden had 36 points. I'll tell you another guy who was like fired up, especially at the end of the game, was Westbrook. You see him? Yeah, he was chirping. Yeah, he was out there chirping.
Yeah, but it's funny. He didn't do none of that chirping against the Thunder. The Rockets are just a front-running team. Once they get ahead by 10 to 15 points, then you see Harden staring down and Westbrook chirping. They're just a front-running team. It's a little bit of a nuisance, but they're going to lose the series, and we'll see how much chirping they're doing after they're going home. We'll see what happens then.
It's, not having the quote-unquote home court advantage.
That hurt the Bucks. That's one of the reasons why the Bucks are struggling so much in the series.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one team before the playoffs started in the bubble I suspected would struggle because of the lack of a home court advantage. They feed so much off of that crowd, and you've seen the last couple of years, you know, how good they've been on the season. They won 60 games last year. They won 60 games again this year. They really feed off of that home energy, especially when they're on that like 15-0 run or 16-3 run. The Bucks won 60 games last year and 56 this year. The crowd is a huge, huge factor, and it's no excuse. Giannis hasn't played well. Mike Budenholzer is really a poor job of managing his minutes, and they're getting beat by the Heat. But I think one of the reasons why is because of that lack of home court.
I think, no team ever in the history of the NBA has ever come back from being down 3-0 in a series.
It's got to happen at some point, right?
No, I think the Heat are too good.
That's a great team.
I think the Heat are too good. Eric Spoelstra, such a great coach. Jimmy Butler, these guys are playing hard on both sides of the court. I don't see it happening. I think I see the Heat advancing.
Too bad that even though they're a good team and they've got all these things going for them, the American Airlines Arena apparently wasn't good enough to allow people to host the polls on November 3rd to vote. I don't know if you saw that story yesterday.
Well, that's not surprising to me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
I'm just going to leave it at that. 800-919-3776 is the phone number. We get back. I have the utmost confidence in my good friend Rob Masiello. He's on, I want to say, what is this, the third or fourth year I've had him on to preview and recap the Triple Crown races, all three of them. We have the Kentucky Derby later on tonight. So Rob is going to join us next and give us some winners. And then I'm with you until 3:00. So David Stewart, hang tight. We'll get to your calls, I promise, here on 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Ty, didn't I say in the break I need to plug in my computer?
I thought you did that already.
Oh man, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm sitting here. I'm on Twitter. I'm on social media. I'm saying I'm doing something and I'm not doing it. I'm all over the place.
Oh, it's falling apart.
It is.
It is. 20 minutes left of the show, and it's
20 minutes. Just hang on, baby. Just hang on. Let's get Rob Masiello on here. You know him if you listen to my show, and hopefully you have for the past few years. Rob always joins me around this time to preview and recap all three legs of the Triple Crown, and what an interesting year this is, Rob. Well, first and foremost, Rob, hi. Hope all's well. Happy Labor Day weekend to you. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to join us.
Happy to be on. It sounds like you're like Johnny Velasquez on Authentic right now. You're at the quarter pole and just trying to get home, just asking for that wire.
I'm just trying to get home. But you know, a very interesting year, right? Like, I use this comparison as well in regard, because you're a golfer, I'm a golfer, we golf together, although we have not golfed together this year. What's up with that? Anyway.
Over the year right now, golfing between the pandemic and a toddler and work and everything else, I have not golfed this year, unfortunately.
All right. Well, you get a free pass then. You get a free pass. I'm dying to go out to Hackensack. Anyway.
Yeah, me too, actually.
So, now my mind's on golfing. Anyway, very interesting year in that usually the Kentucky Derby is the first leg of the Triple Crown. And obviously, for all the apparent reasons, it's not. The Belmont was run, and 'Tis the Law, of course, won the Belmont. And then with golf, typically the first major of the year is the Masters, and that didn't happen. So the Masters now is the last major of the year. So a very, very interesting year when it comes to individual sports, and this is a sport and horses are athletes. But with that being said, you know, how does that make this different in regard to the time of the year that, this race is being run, Rob?
I mean, it's kind of interesting just bringing up the Masters and the Derby, because I always think of them as kind of rites of spring and summer, right? Like, there's nothing like getting through March Madness, and then they're doing the commercials with the Masters and the music, and then, you know, I always think of the Derby as almost like the first kind of, like, day of summer in a lot of respects. And now we're sort of at the end of summer, and we've got the Derby, and like you said, the Masters are in November. So there's that. And with respect to horses, it's interesting because these horses are, you know, they're still maturing as three-year-olds. They really don't hit their maturity until four or five. So it's almost like, I guess the way I would describe it best is it's kind of like, you know, in the beginning of the year, it's almost like they're freshmen in college. And now that they're kind of later in their three-year-old year and they've run more, it's almost like they're seniors in college or almost coming out to be pros. So they've sort of developed more. I mean, you've seen obviously several of these horses run a lot more than they typically do in previous years. And so I think that that's really the big difference, is just the experience difference that they have going into the Derby this year. Again, you know, one of the big questions you always ask going into the Derby is, can they get the mile and a quarter? Well, our favorite this year, Tis the Law, has already run a mile and a quarter. He just won the Travers a month ago. So, you know, again, I think that's sort of the biggest difference, is just the added maturity, added experience, especially at longer distances.
Again, Rob Masiello joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. All right, so let's break it down. You mentioned the Travers, and you and I talk each week because now I'm doing some work for America's Best Racing, and so I tap into your wealth of knowledge when it comes to horseback racing to help me prepare for that. And we were both on Uncle Chuck in the Travers.
Did he finish yet?
I know, poor thing. But Tis the Law, his performance, it wasn't like he just, it was like he didn't even get into sixth gear. Like he blew the field away in fourth gear.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're a degenerate like me and watch a lot of horse racing, if you watch Manny Franco on the far turn, turning for home, one of the things you want to look for to see how much, not always, but most of the time, if your rider on your horse is sitting high in the saddle and his hands aren't moving, that usually means that horse is taking the rider with you and it still has a lot left. If you kind of watch on the far turn, every other rider is kind of low in the saddle and they're riding their hearts out, and Manny's just kind of sitting there not moving a muscle. And I thought what was impressive about that race is, you know, they turn for home and you could see Manny just kind of drops down a little bit, gives Tis the Law the cue. And the way, you know, typically in dirt racing, you don't see, it's kind of just a grind. Everyone's running fast. Everyone's running hard all the way through the wire. He had this burst of acceleration that you typically see in turf racing. Just for an eighth of a mile, he just absolutely went from kind of sitting with the rest of the pack to being five or six lengths in front in no time. And then, you know, the last 16th of a mile or even eighth of a mile, I think at one point Manny was going to hit him and he kind of realized how far ahead he was, and then he started celebrating. So, you know, he's just a tremendous horse. I don't think in horse racing parlance, I don't think they've gotten to the bottom of him yet, which means, to your point, I don't think he's gotten it. I don't think he's ever had to use that sixth gear yet. So he's just a very, very tough favorite today.
Okay, so with that being said, we know Tis the Law, you know, like top of the class coming in. But obviously, the numbers, you know, you're not gonna win money if you bet on Tis the Law, the kind of money, you know, it's money making money, but you're not going to win the type of money. So let's talk about some of the horses, the other horses out there that you feel potentially, you know, again, Tis the Law coming from the 17th post, there is the possibility that the way that this race will be run will not benefit his post. And again, never in the history of the Kentucky Derby has a horse won the Kentucky Derby from the 17th post. But let's talk about some of the horses out there that you feel might have a chance. Like, for example, Honor AP. I had Cynthia Freeland, who joined me on the show a little bit earlier. This is who she's picking to win. Is that a horse that you feel has the potential or the opportunity to upset Tis the Law?
Yeah, absolutely. He's actually a horse that I remember pretty well from the Saratoga auction 2 years ago. He was a very hyped horse when he went through the ring as a yearling. And, you know, everything about him, his pedigree, his stallion honor code, he's bred to go a mile and a quarter on both of his sire's side and his dam side. You know, I'm curious about his last race. The one question mark I had, I just didn't think he ran. Look, he had some trouble. He got knocked around, and he came running a little bit at the end. But, you know, it was a four-horse field in his last race, which was the Shared Belief Stakes at Del Mar. And the entire field finished within a length and a half of each other. He finished second. So I guess my question is, like, so you're telling me that this horse was basically a length away from last. It was a blanket finish with all four horses, and now he's going to go beat Tis the Law. It's like that. That's sort of the problem I have with him. You know, I think he's worth a bet. I think that, look, like I said, he had a little bit of trouble in that race. That race was at a mile and a 16th. I really think he's better at a mile and an eighth plus, and especially a mile and a quarter should be right up his alley. You know, he's traded wins with Authentic earlier in the year. Authentic's going to be one of the favorites today. So he stands a big chance. And like I said, I think his pedigree, I think John Sheriff's, his trainer, is one of the most talented trainers in the country, if not the world. He trains Zenyatta, who is probably one of the best female horses of this century. She won the Breeders' Cup Classic 10 or 11 years ago. So there's a lot to like about him. I wish he were a little bit of a bigger price. I think he's worth a bet. I mean, I think he can certainly win. I'd like to bet him more like 10-1, but, you know, I can't say that he has no chance to win. I mean, he's going to be a much better price than Tis the Law.
What about New York Traffic, Rob? I'm hearing a lot on New York Traffic. Why is this a horse that a number of people are hopeful on, and maybe not to win, but to maybe place or show?
Well, so I think a couple things. One, first of all, I want to say he's a New York bred, just like Tis the Law is also a New York bred.
Woo-hoo!
So it's a real shout out to the New York bred program, which has made huge leaps in value. Yeah, the New York breds are doing great. You know, New York Traffic, I think what you like about him is his last race in the Haskell, he was kind of, you know, for a second it looked like Authentic, who's going to be one of the favorites again, who drew post 18. You know, Authentic in the Haskell, which is a very, very big race down at Monmouth Park in July, kind of looked like he spurted away and was going to win by open lengths. And then in the last eighth of a mile, here comes New York Traffic rolling with Paco Lopez. And, you know, if you think Authentic has a big shot in this race, then you probably have to think New York Traffic, you know, stands a pretty big shot too. The other thing I'd say is, you know, we had Art Collector, who looked like he was going to be one of the favorites. He scratched. You had King Guillermo, who, like Art Collector, I think would have been close to the pace. He scratched. So a lot of the pace dynamic has changed in the last, you know, 72 hours or so. And New York Traffic is one of those horses that figures to be pretty close to the pace. And I think the one thing that could get Tis the Law beat today, maybe, if you're going to make a case against him, is if a horse like Authentic or a horse like New York Traffic is really able to get in front and get really comfortable sitting on a slower pace. I don't think that Tis the Law is going to get beat today, but you know, if you're trying to draw up in your head how he gets beat, I think that that's one of the ways to do it. And your traffic is one of those horses that might be able to do that.
All right. Before I let you go, Rob, how should someone play this? I mean, again, we know no fans, and therefore there's going to be a number of people that are going to be wagering online. How would you direct them, instruct them to play the Derby?
You know, I think the way that Tis the Law gets beat, like I said, is something kind of exogenous happens. Either he breaks poorly or someone's able to steal the race on the front end. But even then, and we talk about this back since California Chrome in 2014, the horses that have tactical speed like Tis the Law, they make their own luck. Like they put themselves in a position to win. So, you know, I think there's two ways you can do this. One would be bet a horse like Honor AP to win and just hope that and Honor AP might be the one horse that could be good enough to just beat Tis the Law, even if Tis the Law runs a good race. The other way to bet this, I think, is to just bet Tis the Law on top and pick a couple long shots. So I'll give you two real quick if you've got a minute. Mm-hmm. One is Enforceable. Enforceable Special and me, I actually raced and owned the mare of this horse, who's become one of the best brood mares of the 21st century. She's been phenomenal. This horse's full brother, Mohamed, was fourth in the Kentucky Derby. If you remember Maximum Security last year, he won the Derby and then got disqualified. That horse was by a stallion. That stallion was out of the mare, Just Whistle Dixie. So this horse is bred up and down to get a mile and a quarter. He's one of these horses that I think the extra 3 months has really benefited him a lot. I think if this race were in May, he would have no shot whatsoever, but he seems to just keep getting better and better. He's going to need a lot of pace to run into. That's my only concern. And like I said, I don't think there's going to be a lot of pace, but he's a horse that is going to be 40-50 to 1. So I would maybe bet Tis the Law over that horse. And then I also like Attachment Rate for Dale Romans, who I thought ran a really good race last time out in the Ellis Park Derby. He was beaten by Our Collector, who I think would have had a big shot in this race. Unfortunately, he had a scratch with a foot injury. So I would either bet Honor AP to win, or I would bet Tis the Law over a couple long shots over Attachment Rate and Enforcement.
Fantastic. Great stuff as always, Rob. Really do appreciate your time. Enjoy the race later on this afternoon, and wishing you and your family a fantastic Labor Day weekend.
Great. Thanks. Appreciate it.
You got it.